on today's featured, I wanted to talk about Ghost Spider. That's what we call her now. She didn't start off this way.
Oh.
She started as plain old Gwen Stacy. So, as people may know, Gwen Stacy died in 1975 in The Amazing Spider-Man, basically because her character was found to be boring by the creators. They're like, she's too much of a goody two-shoes. What else are we going to do with her? We need to get Peter with somebody else. So they killed Gwen Stacy all the way back in 75. Here's a theory. I was looking for anything to like help support this. Gwen Stacy, like, we hadn't really heard a lot about her until she was in The Amazing Spider-Man, played by the amazing Emma Stone. And suddenly, everybody liked Gwen Stacy. Now, The Amazing Spider-Man 1 came out in 2012. Amazing Spider-Man 2 came out in 2014, where, of course, spoiler alert, but it's been 9 years since it came out. So if you don't know by now, Gwen Stacy dies in Amazing Spider-Man 2.
What?
What? We watched it together, girl. So that same year, 2014, is when Spider-Gwen, as we've come to call her, was created. And the creator, Jason Latour, said what inspired him to create her is he's like, Gwen has always been this trope. She's just another female character that dies to further the plot of the male superhero. So he wanted to make her more interesting and turn her into a Spider-Woman, an alternate dimension Spider-Woman who is her own hero. So I think it was the popularity of Emma Stone that really kicked this off. But basically, she's just like our Peter Parker. She got bit by a spider. She has the power to cling to walls. She has super strength, super speed. She has a spider sense. But what I think is very tragic about her story is her Peter Parker wanting to be powerful as well. He made himself a lizard serum, and he eventually turned crazy, just like Kurt Connor's lizard, and he ended up dying, and she got blamed for it, which is very sad. Mm-hmm. But this character, a lot of people were kind of skeptical. They're like, well, Gwen should stay dead because it was such a big thing in her canon. But everybody's come to like her. Her costume has actually been praised as one of the best spider costumes in years. And a lot of people like that she stands apart from the other Spider-Woman, because she's a more fleshed out character and she has more of a personality, a lot of people feel.
Okay.
So yeah, and now she goes by Ghost Spider in the continuity, because there's so many Spider-Woman. There's already like three others.
Well, and if you're trying to be anonymous, you probably don't want to call yourself Spider-Gwen.
Yeah, she never called herself Spider-Gwen. Yeah. That was just what we called her in our world. Mm-hmm. But it's funny too, because the whole Spider-Gwen thing kicked off this whole kind of joke where there was a year where there were all different colors. There's like Gwen-nito. There was like Captain Gwen-merica. So I think there's Iron Gwen. Like, there's a whole series of these covers. Mm-hmm. So I just think it's funny that she's become so iconic in so little time, and she even kind of is the standout character in Across the Spider-Verse, in my opinion.
There's also Gwen Popcorn Bucket.
Yeah, Gwen Popcorn Bucket. She actually randomly spawned another character, Gwenpool.
Oh.
Because that one started off as a joke too, but then Gwenpool became her own character. So she's not even a variant of Gwen Stacy, but she started off as a joke. So yeah, that's the power of what we like.
Yeah.
If we're going to pay money for it, they'll give it to us.
Oh yeah. Popcorn Bucket.
Popcorn Bucket.
Remain seated, please. Permanecer sentados, por favor.
The Marvelous Galaxy.
Disney, yeah.
Welcome to this week's Marvelous Galaxy of Disney. We did see the aforementioned Across the Spider-Verse, so much like we did with Little Mermaid last week, we have a spoiler-free and a spoiler-filled episode for you here today. Mm-hmm. But before we get into our news, who the heck are you?
I'm Alan.
I'm Sean. We're here to talk Margal Disbiz news with you. Yay! Yeah. All right, so I guess since I accidentally announced it, let's start with Margal Disbiz. So we said, who was your favorite performance in The Little Mermaid? So, Alan, how do you think this went?
I think there are probably some clear favorites and some clear unfavorites in this.
So do you think Javier Bardem as Triton was the winner?
Oh, all the way. Yes, for sure.
So, by the way, the Prince Eric song, we talked about it last week, but even more so, I have not heard a single person who likes that song. Somebody even asked friend of the pod, Kevin, to sing it, and he was like, I don't want to. I don't like that song. So it's funny because I've been hearing a lot of people talk about the Scuttlebutt song, but I mean, I've heard news articles talk about it, but it seems like the moviegoers just really didn't like Prince Eric more than Scuttlebutt.
I mean, I love Scuttlebutt. I don't know how you can hate it.
Yeah. So our votes went as mentioned, or as I'm going to say, Javier Bardem, Triton, got 0 votes. Mm-hmm. Jonah Howard King as Prince Eric got 0 votes. And I don't think Prince Eric was bad. I just think he was serviceable. He just did a good job.
He passed.
Yeah. So then it's between Halle Bailey as Ariel or Melissa McCarthy as Ursula. Melissa McCarthy as Ursula got 27% of the votes.
Wow.
Which leaves Halle Bailey with 73%.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, she was amazing. I really enjoyed her. Yeah. I think I voted for Ursula only because I wasn't expecting it as much. Mm-hmm. As I've mentioned, I was afraid. Like, how are you going to deal with my Ursula?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't want to take away from Halle Bailey because she was amazing as well. Like, she was my Ariel this generation, but it was hard to choose between the two.
Yeah. I mean, especially because with Halle Bailey, there were a lot against her in terms of opinions for various reasons. But yeah, I mean, for me, like, it was tough to choose between Melissa and Halle because I think both of them did. They were both standout.
Yeah. I think for me, what pushed Melissa over the top a little bit is they both did such a great impression of the cartoon, but I feel Melissa kind of added to her impression with herself.
Yeah.
Whereas Halle Bailey did a remarkable job of being Jodie Benson, but she didn't really add to that so much.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, you know what else is cool?
What?
Let's take a trip over to Galaxy. So this week, I believe starting today, we're recording this yesterday, which is our today, I believe today, if you watch Wheel of Fortune, you're going to get an extra little surprise.
Ooh.
This is so exciting to me. So anybody who is a fan of Wheel of Fortune and Star Wars will get a mashup of both.
Nice.
So they've decorated the set of Wheel of Fortune to be all Star Wars themed. The promo picture here is Pat Sajak and Vanna White both holding a lightsaber. Pat is holding the red one and Vanna is holding the blue one, if that indicates anything.
Wow, okay.
So, yeah, I just think this is fun. It's a fun way to celebrate the much-beloved Star Wars fandom, which has been around since, 1977? So, almost 50 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. So if you are a fan of Wheel of Fortune or Star Wars, tune in for that. I'm sure a lot of the puzzles will probably be, well, they don't really do. Yeah, they do.
Like the clue or the actual like words they solve.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Puzzle. Yeah. Words they solve. I'm sure a lot of it will be, if not all of it, will be Star Wars themed as well.
Yeah. I'm just like, Wheel of Fortune, you're kind of a month too late. Like, they should have done this in May, like kick it off for already May the 4th, but still so cool nonetheless. But I'm just like, you're a month too late.
I know. This would have been huge if they did it like the week of May the 4th.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least they're doing it.
Yeah, no, it's so cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know what else is really cool? I'm excited for this. So in the Clone Wars, there was a brief episode where R2-D2 formed what's called the D-Squad, or the Droid Squad.
That's cute.
So what's really cute is they're bringing the D-Squad into comic book form.
Wow.
They're going to have their own little mini-series.
That's cool.
So this is part of the whole Dark Droids that we talked about on a previous episode, where it's like a horror-themed Star Wars with evil droids. So it looks like here we have Chopper from Rebels. We have one of the Pit Droids. We have 4LOM, IG-88, and then I don't remember the names off the top of my head, but they're the evil droids from Dr. Aphra. It looks like they're all teaming up for some sort of little droid squad.
That's cool.
So this will be coming out, I believe, later this month. Oh, here it has their names. So R2-D2, IG-88, 4LOM, WAC-47, BT-1, and 000.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting because, like, you know, comics are very much, or not every comic, but a lot of comics have, like, you know, they talk, but a lot of these droids don't. So it seems very, like, graphically, like, you're just kind of looking at pictures for the most part.
Well, three of them talk.
Okay. Just based off of, like, the art that they're sharing?
Oh, yeah. A lot of times what they'll do for comics is sometimes they'll show the art without the words.
Oh, okay.
But you're right. The two droids that they show here, they're showing R2-D2 and the Pit Droid.
Yeah.
This could be just the straight-up page because, yeah, neither of them actually talks. So I'm wondering if they just didn't add the beeps yet or if this is really just what the page looks like.
Okay.
But this was written by Mark Guggenheim, who is a big name in comics. And, yeah, I'm not seeing a date, but it kicks off directly after Dark Droids 2, which I believe is coming out this month. So, yeah, we should have it this month.
Cool.
Cool. Well, what's up next? George Lucas is up next.
Mm-hmm. And he has some thoughts, apparently.
He has some thoughts. So, in case you don't know, George Lucas is infamous for not really liking any of the sequel trilogy. He had a lot to say about how Disney basically took all of his ideas and threw it out the window after, I guess, they kind of told him that they would be faithful to it. So actually in Tony Gilroy, who was the screenwriter of Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, just opened up in a interview about what George Lucas felt about his movie Rogue One.
Oh.
So George Lucas actually called him and talked to him for about 45 minutes.
Wow.
About how much he loved it.
Good.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that out of all the ones that Lucas hasn't been involved with, so Rogue One, Solo, A Star Wars Story, the trilogy series, I would say out of all of those, I think Rogue One is the truest to the feel of Lucas's vision in, like, the humor, the story, everything there.
Yeah.
Well, I should say the original trilogy. I'm not a big fan of the prequels. I'm sorry. I don't hate them, though.
So is World of Color, apparently.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. We should talk about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I just thought that was cool that he enjoyed it. And it makes sense because it directly ties into A New Hope, which is his first Star Wars movie he ever did. So that's probably like his baby. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he really loved it. Well, speaking of loving it, tell us about Lego.
Yeah, so there are some new Lego sets coming out in ahead of the new Ahsoka series coming out. And yeah, it's across various of the movies. So the first one that is coming out is based off of A New Hope with the Yavin 4 Rebel base. And it comes with, you know, a lot of the characters that we know and love, like Luke, Leia, Han Solo, Chewbacca, C-3PO, General Dodonna, John Vader.
Oh.
Yeah, that one was, I was like, I had to see that twice to recognize it. But yeah, other characters as well, too. And it is $169.99. And then the next two sets are inspired by Clone Wars. So we have Yoda's Starfighter, featuring two minifigures of the famous Jedi Master with his green lightsaber and R2-D2. And then the other one is the Clone Wars set with Ahsoka's clone trooper battle pack is what they call it, which features the clone infantry support speeder and four clone trooper minifigures. And that will, the Yoda set is $34.99, with Ahsoka set being $19.99. So I like how there's a range of, you know, expensive premium ones and also more affordable ones. And then the last set is, this is not really much of a set, but it's actually an advent calendar, for 2023. So I love these advent calendars because it's basically, if you're not familiar, every day leading up to the holidays for Christmas, you get a gift, basically. And a lot of the Lego ones are usually like the minifigures or pieces to build out something bigger. But yeah, this one will have minifigures like the Emperor in an ugly Christmas sweater, which is cool. Omega from the Bad Batch, who's on a sled, and even an Ewok in a festive outfits with winter themed decorations. And that one will cost $44.99, which actually isn't that bad because it comes with 24 figures and builds, and so it's not a bad price. So yeah, looking forward to that, probably closer to the holidays. Yeah, I love Lego sets.
That's why you have so many of them.
I mean, I like them. I have a lot of the smaller like builds, but I still have yet to have like one of the bigger premium ones because they're expensive
and they take up a lot of room.
Yeah, they take up a lot of room and a lot of time.
So actually, it's funny, I wasn't going to report on this, but you got me excited about it, so I'm going to throw it in there. this month, Star Wars comic book number 35 is coming out.
Uh-huh.
And what's cool about this is we've talked about how Luke lost his father's blue lightsaber. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in between Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi, he comes back with the green lightsaber. But it's been recently revealed that he was using a dead Jedi Master's yellow lightsaber. Mm. Before building his own green lightsaber.
Okay.
But now it's been revealed, this is getting very twisty and turny.
Yeah.
Now it's been revealed that he didn't just build a green lightsaber, also a red lightsaber.
Wow.
So it looks like he may have struggled between the light and the dark side. Mm. I don't know for sure because I haven't read it yet because it's not out yet.
Yeah.
But it looks like this could also tie into Last Jedi because people have said that Luke had a red kyber crystal when he was in solitary.
Oh.
On his little Acto Island. I think that's what you call it. So I think that's pretty cool. I think it's a cool idea that he was struggling between. The cover shows him with the two lightsabers. And on the red lightsaber side is Darth Vader. On the green lightsaber side is Yoda. So it looks like he's struggling between the light and the dark.
I thought you were going to end off saying, and it turns out that he's colorblind.
Oh my God. That's funny,
because there's so many colors. He basically has all the possible lightsaber colors except for purple,
which is my favorite. So Dave Filoni, who we know of the kind of mastermind behind a lot of the Star Wars expanded canon, including the creator of the Clone Wars, mm-hmm. has recently opened up about the Ahsoka show.
Ooh.
Would you like to know what he said?
Sure.
I think this is interesting. So this is his words exactly. This is a direct quote. He said, and he's talking about Ahsoka, she's a wanderer at this point and is in a lot of ways wary of any organization as such because of the power that comes with it as a group. She walks a path that basically died out a long time ago, and there aren't many like her left, if any. So that's a lonely thing. What is that life like? If you're a loner, you have a very small circle of friends. What is it like then when you try to open back up?
Mm.
So that's the basis of the Ahsoka show. What we do know at this point is at the end of Rebels, Ahsoka and Sabine Wren went off together to try to find Ezra Bridger, who's the main character of the show. We know that Kanan Jarrus has been killed off, so we probably won't see him unless there's like a clone thing or like a fake out death. Mm-hmm. We know that she talked to Grogu, So besides that, we don't really know much else.
Yeah.
Filoni did kind of say that Ahsoka is the key to, like, moving from the original trilogy into, like, the expansion between the original and the sequels. Mm-hmm. So she's going to be, like, the key character to explore what was going on in those 20 years since Return of the Jedi.
Nice.
So, yeah. And this makes sense because he created her. So, of course, like, she's basically the main character of the Clone Wars along with Anakin. We saw her grow from a Padawan into basically a Jedi Master. Mm-hmm. So I think it's natural that she would be a standout character, especially for how popular she's become.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's an interesting synopsis of what the story is. It sounds like she's going to go through a lot of, like, who should I trust?
Yeah.
Almost like a cult member who just left a cult and is trying to figure out things. Listen to Once Upon a Cult.
Wow.
No, just kidding. But yeah, no, I'm excited for it. And it, I feel like, I mean, I'm not like an expert of Ahsoka, but like from what I got when I watched some of the episodes of Clone Wars, like, she seemed more, it seems opposite of what she was before, because she seemed very like bubbly and open, and now she's turned into more, I mean, obviously because like all her Jedi friends are, most of her Jedi friends are gone. So it makes sense of how she's acting, but
yeah, I went from hating her character in the first episode to now I have her Ahsoka Mickey Mouse ears on her wall.
Yeah.
I love her character now. She grew so much. And I mean, I guess if you don't want to hear this, it's a little bit of spoiler for Clone Wars, but one of the biggest events that happened with her towards the end is she was framed for a crime that her friend committed. She was framed by her friend. And so the Jedi Council basically ousted her. She had to flee from the council. And in doing so, that's the only reason why she survived Order 66, because she was on the run and Darth Maul was after her.
Yeah.
So she ended up being able to break apart from being with a lot of clone troopers. And the one that she was with, she was able to help break him out of the control in order to save herself. So she is a very tragic character. She has been ousted by the Jedi Council. Everything she believed in her life, you kind of say, like, it's cult-like. It is.
Yeah.
Like, imagine having to start over with nobody you know. Yeah. And that's kind of how she landed in Rebels, is she kind of found them. But even then, they're a very small group of people.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a lot of opportunity there. Also, the fact that, like, she was the first person to really figure out that Darth Vader is Anakin Skywalker. Because she was so close with Anakin, when she faced Darth Vader, she felt his presence.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of story there. And I've heard that we're going to get, like, a recreated battle between Darth Vader and Ahsoka, but live action. Nice. As, like, what's that called? Like a memory?
Oh, like a flashback?
Flashback. Yeah. There you go. I know words. So, yeah, I'm. Nice. If you can't tell, I'm really excited about this show. I'm definitely going to be there for it. I'm going to rewatch Andor one day when I'm done with Doctor Who.
Yeah.
And I feel like I'll like it better. I think I probably just had too high of expectations the first time.
Yeah.
It wasn't what I thought it was going to be.
And I think, I mean, I'm hoping and I feel like this is going to not be like Andor, and hopefully it will be kind of like a what Mandalorian was when it first came out. Just very exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, no, I guess like what was it? Obi-Wan was really good too, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like Mandalorian, ironically, has lost its way a little bit. This is the way, but we lost it. Like, the third season was still really good, but it doesn't feel like it has as much of a purpose as it once did. So, yeah, hopefully this will be, like, a fresh set of eyes on a new show. So, yeah. Well, that's it for Galaxy. Shall we hop on over to Disney?
Disney.
Disney. So there's been a lot of talk with this whole Ron DeSantis and Disney going on. Not to harp on that too much, because I'm sick of it.
Yeah.
But it's been said that Disney is looking to move their offices out of Florida. Well, not move out, but they were going to move to Florida, but they're not anymore. Yeah. So sadly, a lot of the employees moved out there, what, like 2 years ago to help start the offices, and now they're moving back. So a heavy rumor has come out. I'm only reporting on this one because there has been a few rumors of different states reaching out to get Disney because that's a big moneymaker. But there's a heavy rumor that they may be considering Nevada.
Okay.
So they'd be a lot closer to home.
Yeah.
But what sucks is it would just be like their offices, not like a park or anything.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's smart because, yeah, it's still pretty close to California or Southern California, where if they need to travel over there, or, you know, it's like a, it's not a far drive for them. And, or even like people moving there too, although I don't know, Nevada, some people might have thoughts about moving to Nevada. But yeah, I think it's something that is a realistic rumor, I would say, because I think it's possible.
I guess what kind of sucks for the employees, if you're working for Disney, you probably love the parks and like you probably get a pass. But
yeah,
if you're not in Florida or California, you can't really do much.
True.
But I guess the reason why this rumor is taking shape is Sony announced they're building a new studio in Southern Nevada. And one of the developers, Brandon Bircher, stated that the next movie studio to show interest is Walt Disney Pictures. So according to a developer, they've shown interest. Another rumor came from Jeremy Renner, who mentioned that Disney might even be a possible studio partner for them.
Wow.
Yeah. So yeah, and it looks like there's more of a quote here from Bircher saying, "Sony and Disney are just the tip of the iceberg. We have been in very active negotiations with many studio production companies. And once this bill becomes law, we will be concluding the negotiations and then making the announcement of our big name production partners."
Wow.
So it looks like Nevada might be getting a lot going on.
Well, I mean, I know it's not like directly related, but even like Universal, they're expanding their Horror Nights to be a year-long event in Vegas at Area 15. So, you know, even though this is just like a studio deal, there might be even some entertainment opportunities out in Nevada too that might happen. Maybe like a mini indoor theme park, because it's so hot. They get so hot in southern Nevada. You know, that might be an opportunity too, which would be really cool.
Yeah, and I wonder if you have a lot of people working for Disney, I wonder if they would consider building something for the public there to like entice workers to work out there.
Yeah. Well, there's also their, you know, their community that they're building in Palm Springs, which isn't too far from Southern Nevada as well too. So yeah, that could be like the link between LA and, I'm thinking more like closer to Vegas, but we'll just keep it broad with Southern Nevada for now.
So it looks like the bill that the quote is referring to is the Nevada Senate Bill 496. Most people are naming it the film bill. So it would bring massive tax breaks to any film company that moves to the Silver State.
Okay.
So that's why a lot of studios are rushing over there.
Yeah.
If it gets passed.
Yeah.
Because it hasn't been passed yet. But I mean, Nevada, you would be stupid to not pass this. Right. This is a lot of money coming into your doors.
Yeah.
And I'm happy that it's a state that we're friends with.
Yeah. I mean, it is a state that sometimes can kind of lean one way or the other, but it's still, sorry, Florida people, but it's still a better, more welcome thought than Florida right now. Just change your governor.
Well, and I think a lot of people who work in film are more so on a certain side.
Yeah.
So I think having all those people move there would be helpful for our side.
Yeah. Well, also even like, yeah, if you're filming out there too, a lot of celebrities do live on the West Coast in Hollywood.
Oh, yeah.
So it is, you know, a closer commute than it would be like elsewhere.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, all these new jobs might be good because...
Because we've talked about this before with Disney as a whole. You know, they are laying off a bunch of people. But that one thing that, you know, you might not think of is that it also does affect Pixar as well, too, because Pixar actually just had their first major job cut in 10 years. They laid off 75 of their employees, unfortunately. And what's more unfortunate is that a lot of the jobs that were cut were actually from people who had worked on Lightyear, because it didn't do so well, because it underperformed, I should say, in the box office. A lot of the staff that worked on it happened to be laid off, unfortunately. So a bit of sad news for Pixar, but hopefully the studio does pick up. And hopefully these people who got laid off are able to find jobs, because as we know, it is pretty tough out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, in lighter news, if these people who are joining me on unemployment need a little magic to help them through, it's just been announced, actually officially, by Sean Bailey, the Walt Disney Pictures president, that a certain movie is in production right now.
Nice.
Hocus Pocus 3!
Yay!
Alan, Hocus Pocus 3! I loved Hocus Pocus. I love Hocus Pocus 2. I thought it was an excellent sequel. I had very minor, like, things that I thought were kind of weird about it or didn't work, but I'm so excited. This is because when Hocus Pocus 2 came out in October of 2022, it actually broke some records. It was amongst the Nielsen top 10 streaming. It took home the largest opening weekend with 2.7 billion minutes viewed following its September 30th premiere. And it's one of the most watched original films for Disney Plus.
Nice.
So I'm glad that Disney finally listened to what we want, because we've been begging for a Hocus Pocus sequel since the original. Mm-hmm. And look what happens when it finally came out. It broke records.
Yeah.
So not a lot is known, obviously. It's not even known yet if I guess it wouldn't be in production. It's in very early stages, because we don't know yet if our original three actresses are going to be in it. And by that, I'm referring to Kathy Najimy, Bette Midler, and Sarah Jessica Parker. They have expressed interest in coming back, but I guess they're not attached as of yet. But one thing that Sean Bailey did talk about in the announcement, in the interview, is he said that they worked really hard to try to get some of the original cast to at least make cameos in Hocus Pocus 2, and he said it just wasn't working out, but he said that they're really working on getting Omri Katz and Vanessa Shaw into Hocus Pocus 3, which we know as Max Dennison and Allison Watts. He said he'd like to show them living in California together. So they're still together, apparently, in the lore.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. So I think there's a lot of promise here. I think what I'd like to see in a Hocus Pocus 3, and I've talked about this in, you should have seen the text messages I sent Kevin. I basically sent him my whole story idea. I think it'd be cool that with the end of Hocus Pocus 2, ending with like a softer side of the sisters, especially Winifred, who is the most evil of them. Since they were shown mercy and a kind of a lighter side, I think it'd be cool to kind of see them questioning their evil in the third one, and maybe even doing some good to help fight against their mother, who is, I don't remember the actress' name, but the beautiful blonde lady who we met in Hocus Pocus 2.
Yeah.
So we'll see what they come up with, though. I have full faith and trust in them, whether the sisters are in it or not. I do kind of feel like we do need the sisters, though, because they'll be focused. But we do have the new witch characters, so we'll see if they're the focus or if they're the focus with the Sanderson sisters.
Well, I hope so, too, since it did so well streaming, that the third one will come back into theaters.
Yeah.
Because I do want to see it in theaters. Like, even if they re-release the second one, I wouldn't mind watching it in theaters, too.
That's true, yeah. Especially, like, movies like Turning Red. Like, we didn't get that in theaters either. And, like, Encanto was originally just Disney Plus, but then they threw it in theaters because it did so well. So yeah, I don't know. I still don't understand your motives, Disney. You keep complaining that Disney Plus isn't making the money you want, but like, throw Obi-Wan in theaters, throw Hocus Pocus 2. Like, we will pay to watch them, I promise.
Or even re-release, well, I don't know if Disney has the rights to it, but re-release the original Hocus Pocus, the first one, in theaters.
They do. They have the rights.
Yeah. I'd like to see that in theaters.
Yeah, yeah. I did see it at a midnight showing. It was so fun. I was having the time of my life.
Yeah.
Cool. So we're good with Hocus Pocus 3. We're both on board for it.
I hate it.
Okay. Bye. Shall we move over to Parks and Rec?
Parks.
Parks. And Rec.
Parks.
Parks and Rec.
Parks and Rec.
Okay, everyone. I have something I need to tell you. I'm obsessed. I love this so much. If you haven't heard, there is a viral TikTok of a mom and her daughter at our Disneyland park here in Anaheim, California. And they went to the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique, which, if you don't know, the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique is known for making over kids as princesses.
And princes.
And princes? Yes. I didn't know if they did princes. Mm-hmm. Okay, so princes and princesses. So they'll give you, like, a tiara. They'll give you – do they put makeup on them?
I don't think for the boys. They have, like, a whole, like, prince armor that they have them wear.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah.
So the reason why we bring this up is because there was this TikTok of a mom and her daughter going to get her daughter princessified, and they were greeted by cast member Nick, who was a – I don't know. I don't want to gender Nick because I don't know Nick's pronouns, but Nick is what looks to be a cis male.
Yeah, well, a male – what's the word? Male –
presenting.
Presenting, yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Because Nick has a mustache and he has a male haircut.
Yeah.
But he was wearing one of the dresses that typically we see on the female cast members. So the reason why the mom posted this is she loved Nick. She thought that they were just the most animated, and Nick just made the daughter just feel so happy to be there and be a princess. So the mom posted this to TikTok, and it's actually gone viral, and there's actually some hate with it too. Mm-hmm. But luckily, you being more of a TikToker than me, do you want to say what you found?
Well, the video itself, like, that part of Nick was only like a small fraction of what the whole video, it was just documenting the experience that her daughter had going through the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique transformation, because Nick's role in this whole thing was just welcoming the TikToker's daughter and then having her check in, basically. But yeah, what's great though, because yeah, when I first heard about it and saw articles, it's like, oh, the internet is on fire because they're against Nick. You know, basically some people claiming that Nick is the crossdresser, but, and like, you know, is not a good example for children. But a lot of the comments that I found in the original TikTok, it's all positive. It's like, oh, I love Nick. Nick is awesome. Or also people just don't care. And they're just like saying, oh, I love this experience for my daughter. I want this, my daughter to go through this too. Or, oh, I wasn't able to because A, it's expensive, or B, they didn't know about it. But yeah, so that's great. Like a lot of, it's more so the naysayers are more so in the smaller category, and a lot of them are posting, not like responding directly onto this video. They're more so creating their own TikToks that have like 200 views.
Yeah.
So that's just, you know, it is, at first when I first heard it, I was like, oh, this really sucks. And you know, when things like this happen, you kind of go downhill. But when you do a little bit more research, it is a little bit more promising because, yeah, it's, there is some hate, but it's not, the volume of it isn't as big as you would think, which is great.
Yeah, I love that. And what that tells me that they're not posting on the original is that they're afraid to,
yeah,
because they know that they're in the minority. So yeah, good, you should feel that way. But so what some people have been saying is that the fact that Nick has a mustache means that he's not, or they're not transgender. Mm-hmm. So they shouldn't be wearing a dress. So I'm like, shut up.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter if Nick wants to appear as a female or just a male wearing a dress. Nick just wanted to wear a dress because that's what Nick wanted to wear.
Yeah.
So
and Disney renamed their roles as casts or as fairy godmother apprentices so that it is more inclusive of who can be in that role as a cast member. So because I believe before it was more so just females working in that role. So I love that Disney did open it up to other people. But yeah, again, like this specific role is not a gendered role. Anyone can really do it. So just people need to calm down a bit.
So I will tell you, Favorites, that we did stop by the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique yesterday because, like I said, I'm obsessed. I really want to meet Nick in person. What my ultimate goal would be is I would love to have Nick on this podcast and be able to ask them, you know, what are their pronouns? What was the response by children and adults to seeing Nick in the dress? I just really want to get more of the story, so I'm going to start looking in on Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique every time we go to try to meet Nick in person. I'm obsessed.
Yeah. And one insider tip is that if you want a slight bit of the Bibbidi Bobbidi Boutique experience, but you don't want to spend a lot of money to do for your child to have like a little makeover or even yourself, you can be pixie dusted. I think that's what I call it. Basically, they have these wands where they'll just shake their wand over your head and a bunch of glitter will go on your head as like pixie dust. So that's kind of like a cool free thing that they do.
Yay! Yeah. So we didn't do that yesterday. We said we were going to.
Yeah.
But you know what we did do yesterday, which was magical and showered down on our heads?
Yeah, a lot.
We saw World of Color 1 once again. Uh-huh. And we saw it once again because, in case you don't know, they've added a really quick pre-show where they show basically a trailer to Elemental, but with the water effects and the lighting. And it was really cool to see.
Yeah, it was really fun.
We ended up getting fast pass. I always call it fast pass.
The virtual queue.
We got virtual queue. So yes. In case you don't know, if you're already in one of the parks before 12, then at 12 o'clock, you can, through the app, get virtual queue for the 9 o'clock or 10:15 show. We were those people. We were on the Grizzly River Rapids.
Yeah.
And we had our phones out because it was just minutes before 12 when we got on. But luckily, Alan got us in and we ended up standing directly next to the water.
Yeah.
Which, if you do that, I heard some people behind us say, oh, the cast members said we will be lightly misted on. We were dripping water. Yeah. We were soaked. And it's funny because whenever the tall water would shoot up, we would be like, oh,
coming.
One, two. Yeah.
I think it's a bit foretelling that we did the virtual queue on Grizzly River when we were getting wet already.
True.
But yeah, I mean, I knew, yeah, we were going to get wet in the front, but I didn't know it was going to be that wet.
Yeah,
like it was like a torrential rainfall, basically.
At one point, it felt like somebody just squirted a super soaker.
Yeah.
But it was fun. I would recommend experiencing that at least once. I know it sucks because, I mean, the show's at 9 or 10:15. So unless it's like an abnormally warm night, you might be cold. Luckily, we didn't get too cold. It was a warmish night.
Yeah, we dried off, you know, fairly in a decent amount of time. But yeah, I mean, you can always, we saw a lot of people bring ponchos as well.
Yeah.
If you don't want to get wet, but you want that up close, because it is pretty cool to see all the fountains up close too. Like, you don't realize how high these water fountains go until you're actually like in the front.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what else we'll be able to get wet on next year?
Yeah.
Tiana's Bayou Adventure.
Yeah. And so, as you know, both of the versions here in America and in California and Orlando have closed, but Disney did release, and I think they're going to continue doing this, release more information on the ride itself. And one thing that Disney released is that are the names of the artists who are going to be responsible for the music for the ride. And I love this because they hired natives from New Orleans to work on the music. The first one, his name is PJ Morton, and the other is Terrence Blanchard. Apparently, if you're from New Orleans, these two names are probably, you know, familiar to you. But yeah, they're pretty popular in New Orleans and well known. And yeah, they're going to be both pulling songs from the movie or music from the movie, as well as creating new songs as well too, or I guess a new soundtrack for the ride. So I love that. I love that they're sticking to, I guess, the roots of the story of the Princess and the Frog, keeping everything in New Orleans. So I love that, and I can't wait for what the whole ride is going to sound like and feel like when you go through the bayou.
Yeah, I'm so excited.
Yeah.
I am so stupid excited. And, like, I'll repeat, like, Splash Mountain's one of my favorite rides and has been since I first went on it when I was 9. But it's time for an update.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I love Splash Mountain, but I love Splash Mountain because of the ride system. Because you can go through, you not fall, but you slide down. And then, yeah, you see all the animatronics. You're still going to get the animatronics with this,
like, better animatronics.
Yeah, and you're still gonna get wet and, you know, go down the chutes as well too. So the only thing that's different is a storyline, which, yeah, I think we can see you as a new storyline.
Yeah it's not like they're tearing it down and putting, like, bumper boats,
right? But for the, I don't know how to transition to this, but if you are planning on going on a trip next year to Walt Disney World, and you're staying at select hotels that are saying that they have early entry to the park, you might want to pay attention to whether or not they're going to offer new entry or early entry next year in 2024, because it looks like some hotels offering it this year are not offering it next year for now. And those are more so the hotels that are not Disney-specific hotels. So, like, I believe there's the Wyndham Hotel. There's also, like, Hilton Hotels as well, too. Those might not offer early entry next year. So just double-check. There's a whole list that you can check on the website. But, yeah, and it also changes as well, too, because apparently earlier in this report, some hotels weren't on that list. So, yeah, just as a heads-up, if you do plan on going to Disney World next year in 2024.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Like, it should be just Disney hotels itself. They're probably getting too many people doing it, so it's not as special.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, and I didn't even know that non-Disney-owned hotels offered early entry.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. But at the same time, I don't know. My personal opinion, I like staying on property because there's just so much. Aside from early entry, there's a lot of other, like, amenities, or just you're in that bubble as well too of Disney.
Yeah,
which,
yeah,
I love. Yeah. Speaking of bubbles,
oh, nice one.
I don't know how to link that, but bubbles and water in the ocean, I guess. We know that the Moana live action is happening, and the Hollywood Reporter just reported that a new director has been brought in for the Moana live action, and his name is Thomas Kail. And if you don't know who that is, he actually was the director of Hamilton. So it's interesting because him being the director of Hamilton and also Lin-Manuel Miranda, who wrote the songs for Moana, it's kind of like a good mix. And I'm like, why didn't they think of this before? So that's very exciting. And also, who's brought along to this as well too is Jared Bush, who wrote the script for the original film. He'll also be returning for the screenwriting of the movie as well too. So very exciting for this movie to come out as well too, and hopefully does as well or even better than Little Mermaid live action.
Fine. Actually, I do really love Moana. It'd probably be in my top 10 also, but you know me, Little Mermaid's my jam.
Yeah.
But yeah, maybe they will learn from Little Mermaid some of what worked and what didn't, and they can kind of go off of that.
Yeah, or even go off on a trip around the world.
You're on it today.
So if you, and we did report this a while back, but if you missed your opportunity to do that around the world private jet trip that Disney had sold for last year that cost over $100,000, well, it's coming back.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's coming back next year. And if you're not familiar, this is a trip that spans 24 days across 6 countries, and you'll visit all 12 of the Disney theme parks in this trip. And it costs a starting price of $115,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
I feel like you can do it so much cheaper just on your own.
Yeah. I think so too. But, you know, I feel like people with this kind of money probably don't care.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that is going back on sale. But there are different dates depending on who you are, I guess. So June 12th is when the first round of guests who are able to book the trip. And it's basically people who have gone on an Adventures by Disney trip before and who have traveled on three or more adventures. So that's June 12th. And then if you've ever been on a Disney adventure before, this will be open for you June 14th. And then for Golden Oak members, you can book starting June 16th. And then the general public, they're able to book this really cheap trip on June 19th. So yeah. Let us know if you end up booking this and if you need someone to go with.
Yeah. We'll be happy to go.
Yeah.
That would be marvelous. Marvelous. So, this has been announced that Terminators are coming to X-Men.
Oh.
Sort of, not really.
Okay.
It was clickbait, so I thought I'd clickbait you too. So in X-Men number 22 by Gary Dugan and Joshua Cassara, they have announced, well, I guess I should start here. In case you don't know, in X-Men currently on the island of Krakoa, which is a living mutant island, the X-Men have found a way to take five mutants and recreate the process of cloning someone with their mutant powers. So, I mean, it does bring into question, like, the soul. Like, how does that work?
Uh-huh.
Because they're basically growing a new body in an egg. And then Professor X has worked with, of all people, Mr. Sinister, to back up everybody's thoughts, so that way once somebody is cloned, the body's basically a husk, and then they put the backup into the person's head up to the point that they died, so they'll even remember, like, oh, like right before they died.
Yeah,
so they'll remember kind of how they died. But part of the problem is they have to be sure to recover the body of the dead X-Men.
Okay.
Because they were afraid for a long time. People know that they could clone themselves, then the world would be against mutants. And then it came out that they can clone themselves, so everybody knows now. But then a new problem has arose. Well, out of all mutants, if Wolverine gets killed, which he has, we really shouldn't leave his adamantium skeleton out for people to find.
Mm.
Because what could happen is Dr. Mars and Orcus, which is a anti-mutant group who is actively working against mutants by creating newer sentinels. What happens if they get Wolverine's adamantium skeleton and create sentinels out of it?
Oh.
And the reason why this has been compared to Terminator is because it doesn't stop there, having these metallic skeleton-looking robots.
Mm.
But Dr. Mars and Orcus have found a way to grow human skin onto the adamantium robots.
Interesting, okay.
Which is pretty much Terminator.
Yeah, true.
So this is exciting. I think this will be a cool new kind of villain. These are called the X-Sentinels. So we have had things like this before with Sentinels being able to hide themselves as humans, but never with like an adamantium skeleton, which takes it to the next level.
Well, Terminator is Fox, right?
True, yeah.
So, I mean, I'm just saying, like, if Disney just wants, or Marvel Disney wants to save a bit of money or just time to create a new villain, they could just bring the Terminators in.
They could, yeah. It's already been said that, I just heard this from my cousin. I haven't been able to verify this, but you were there.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, one of the writers of The Matrix said that Terminator is a prequel to The Matrix.
Yeah.
So I guess having things cross like that would not be out of line.
Yeah.
So apparently, like, the robots were the precursor to enslaving the humans and putting them in these machines where we are in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. So Terminator happens and then Matrix.
And then they all ride in an apocalypse roller coaster.
Oh, don't remind me of that day. We went to Magic Mountain last week, and it was terrible. I never want to go back. I used to like Magic Mountain. No more.
Yeah.
But anyway, Magic Mountain does have more mature rides.
Yes.
So I guess if you had to rate it, it would be TVMA.
Yes.
Speaking of...
That's why I mentioned that.
I know. Apparently, according to an early report, Disney Plus has okayed Marvel to put out TVMA material.
Ooh, okay.
So specifically, I guess on the promo, it shows a picture of Punisher and Daredevil.
Oh.
Yeah, because those were TVMA on Netflix. Mm-hmm. So how do you feel about Disney Plus having TVMA material?
I think it's fine. You know, Disney Plus, you can add, like, parental features on it. So, yeah, I mean, I just feel like if anyone were to complain, there's ways to safeguard your children from watching that if you are concerned about that.
Yeah, I think it's time. Like, to be honest, like, Netflix has been doing this for years, and there's even certain things you can watch on Netflix. Like, one specifically, our friend who we miss, Rachel, told me there's one with, like, a naked man in the very beginning of the movie, mm-hmm. and that's just, like, on Netflix.
Yeah.
So Netflix isn't family-friendly either, but you can make it family-friendly with control. So I think if Disney Plus wants to put their skin in the game and make some more money, they need to go this route. It's been hinted at, and they need to do it.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, too. Like, it is a way for them to make more money, because I think a lot of people... What might hinder some people from tuning in or buying into Disney Plus is because maybe they're, like, a single older person who is just like, Disney's not for me. But if they have content that they'll subscribe to, then I feel like Disney should.
Yeah, and they already do this in other countries who don't have as many streaming options. They put more on Disney Plus, so there already is that mature content. So I think it's funny that America is one of the last, because what's wrong with us Americans? Why can't we handle stuff like this?
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like it's coming, luckily. And I don't think it's any different. I know Disney comes with a very, like, child-friendly nature. But I think it's time that we all agree that Disney owns a lot of stuff, like Deadpool. They own Alien now. They own Terminator, Predator. They own all this content that doesn't really have a home right now. So putting with Hulu kind of going to the wayside, you need to put all this stuff on Disney Plus. Mm-hmm. I mean, Simpsons is already on there, so why not?
Well, I'm just like, I guess I'm kind of ranting right now, but if you're able to let YouTube babysit your child, then I think it's fine to have Disney Plus have adult content and just screen it for them.
That's true. Yeah. I know, because your kids are probably watching much worse on their phones anyway.
Yeah. I mean, like, I've seen my nieces and nephews watch really crazy stuff on YouTube, and like, I should report them, but I don't. But I'm just like, yeah, YouTube's even crazier.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know what else is crazy?
What?
This whole multiverse and sharing it between Sony and Marvel.
Yeah.
But Sony has announced, like, more is coming. We are definitely getting another Tom Holland Spider-Man movie. I know there's been some weird news lately where they, like, clickbait you into thinking that Tom Holland may not be coming back, but he is with Zendaya. It's been rumored that we're going to see Sandman as the villain, played by the same actor who we've seen, but that's not confirmed yet, just rumored. I think it'd be interesting if it wasn't the Sandman we know, if it was a Sandman from this Earth, which I guess is 616 or 19999. Mm-hmm. I don't really know anymore. It's getting so confusing. But along with Spider-Man 4, it's also been announced that we are getting a Spider-Woman, a.k.a. Spider-Gwen movie with Hailee Steinfeld as Spider-Gwen once more, because she voices her in the Spider-Verse movies, Would you prefer to see Haley play a live action or just voice a computer animated Gwen?
I mean, I'm always a proponent for someone who played or voiced an animated character to also do the live action. So yeah, I wouldn't mind her being that.
Yeah, I think I'd rather see a live Spider-Gwen movie than seeing a continuation of the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, as much as I love the Spider-Verse movies, I want to see them start transitioning to live so they could kind of fit in and cross over with MCU more.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of, we're getting a live-action Miles Morales movie, apparently.
That's cool.
I'm so excited!
Yeah.
Especially with Donald Glover as Aaron Davis all the way back in Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think fans would just flip their lid if we got to see him played out as the Prowler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. I don't want to say anything.
Yeah. And besides that, we're still getting, it looks like, actually, I just noticed it's not mentioned here, but it was rumored that we're also getting the Madam Web movie, which would focus on the Julia Carpenter Spider-Woman turned Madam Web. So she's like a younger Madam Web.
Okay.
So we'll see where it all goes from here.
Yeah, there's so many spider stuff.
I know. Well, there's such a huge universe now. Which, interestingly enough, I didn't remember this. It's been a long time since I watched it. I probably saw these episodes, though. Apparently, all the way back in the 90s, the Spider-Man cartoon,
mm-hmm.
it ended with a very Spider-Verse kind of story.
Yep.
Where he teamed up with, like, a Hollywood actor Spider-Man, like a Ben Reilly Spider-Man,
mm-hmm.
Scarlet Spider. So I guess it was a group of six Spider-Men from different dimensions. And that was before it was ever done, like,
wow,
really in the main continuity.
Yeah.
So I've been meaning to rewatch that. I just want to get farther in the Spider-Man comics, but I'm definitely going to rewatch that. But speaking of Spider-Verse,
mm-hmm.
here's our quick rundown of how we felt about Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse with no spoilers.
Yes.
And again, we'll do a spoiler review after we do our cover Disney.
Okay.
So how did you feel about it?
I liked it. I enjoyed it. I guess this isn't much of a spoiler, but I do like how it's not just focused on Miles Morales, mm-hmm. especially in the beginning. You get to see a little bit more of Gwen's story as well, so I love that. And yeah, it's just cool to see all the different Spider-Men that you Spider
people
beings that yeah, you encounter true. Throughout the movie. So I thought it was good, very entertaining, and the audience that we watched with, they were all into it as well too, and it's cool to like see their hear and see their reactions.
Yeah, I agree. This one, I don't know. It's hard to say if I liked it more or less than Into the Spider-Verse because I've only seen it once. This one did seem to drag a little towards the end, but I think it's because it still felt like there's so much story.
Yeah.
So people were kind of like, oh my God, how much longer? But it does kind of leave you at a very exciting point with the to be continued.
Because
if you didn't know already, Beyond the Spider-Verse, the third one comes out in March of next year. So luckily we don't have too long to wait.
Yeah.
But yeah, very good movie. Very excellent. It's already at a 95% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's making a buka ton of money mm-hmm. worldwide. The way, just like the first one, the way they were able to focus on the different spider beings without it being too much, like it's genius. I loved it.
Yeah. And I love, because they do go into a bit more background on some of the characters as well, too. And I like how they do it in a way. It's like they show you a comic. They're like the comic pages, which is really cool. So they still reference, like, yeah, it's like based off a comic book, obviously. But I do like that little detail that they added in there.
Yeah, and what was really cool, I was thinking it in my brain. I heard the guy behind us kind of saying it to whoever he's watching it with. But a lot of times when they showed, like, the comic covers or images from comics, they were straight from the comics.
Oh, okay.
Like, so they really know their references. They really paid attention to detail. They really reward those of us who have read the comics and kind of know what's going on. So I really enjoyed that.
Yeah.
It was a Spider-Man nerds movie.
Yeah.
Cool. So more on that after Cover Disney. Before we get to Cover Disney, though, I want to know, who is your favorite alt dimension spider person? I guess I should put spider being, because you you make a good point.
Well, you have. I think they're all people, though, right?
No.
Oh, they're not.
So your choices are Spider Gwen, Spider Punk, Spider-Man Noir, our Spider Ham.
That's right.
Yeah, Spider Ham's a pig.
Yep.
He doesn't count as a people.
Yeah.
I just realized only one of these is Peter Parker also. We have some good choices here.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Spider Gwen is Gwen Stacy. Spider Punk is Hobie Brown. Spider Man Noir is Peter Parker. And Spider Ham is Peter Porker. So, yeah, I'm excited to see what people think about those characters. And we will reserve our judgment until next week when we reveal our answers. So before we get into our Cover Disney, do you have a favorite moment this week?
Favorite moments would have to be, it's probably just when we watched World of Color, it's not going to be like something I'd want to do in the near future, but just watching World of Color in the front row, like I've always wanted to do it. And actually it's very feasible. You just have to do the virtual queue, and then like it's easy just to walk down to the front. And if you show up early, well, we didn't even like move down there that early before the, like maybe 20 minutes before the start of the show. Again, it's very feasible if you want the front row. Just be prepared that you do get wet, but I still love that experience. It was fun to do that. And yeah, it's just, again, like it kind of just shows the height of all the fountains and how big they end up going. That was probably my favorite moment.
What was cool too, I don't know if I just haven't noticed this, but I feel like because the speakers were to the side of us, you really hear the water. Yeah. So that was kind of cool to get to experience that.
Yeah.
I know this is probably kind of beating a dead horse at this point, but my favorite moment is Nick. And the reason why I'm so obsessed with him is I consider myself a he-they. I like to present as male, but I also like to show off my female side. So, like, I have mad respect for him for going to work in a dress. I think that was very brave in such a public place to just express themselves that way. And I have a lot of respect for them for living their truth. I love that people are reacting positively to it. I love that Nick is able to like bring so much joy to kids while still kind of showing them that there's an alternative to just being stuck in a box. So that's kind of why I'm obsessed with him and so excited by it.
Well, that's the thing too. What's like people don't realize is that kids, like, they're there just for the experience. They don't care who is doing it for them or what gender is doing this for them. So like when people complain about this, it just ruins the experience for children, really.
Yeah. And I mean, children are gonna encounter that in life, so why not do it in a way that's like family friendly and fun?
Yeah.
All right, so Cover Disney this week. I thought it would be very fitting. I know the song's a little old. This came out along with Spider-Man Homecoming very long ago. But this is actually the Spider-Man theme as sang by Michael Bublé. So here's a little listen for you.
Spider-Man, Spider-Man, does whatever a spider can. Spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out, here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, buddy, he's got a radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there, there goes the Spider-Man. In the chill of night, at the scene time of crime. Like a streak of light, he arrives just in time.
How did you feel about the Spider-Man theme as sung by Michael Bublé?
Well, like any other Michael Bublé song, it's just always something nice to listen to.
Yeah.
I just remember when you first played it for me, you're like, who sings this? Or who do you think is an artist? And I'm just like, Michael Bublé. He just has, like, you know, a very unique sounding voice. So
yeah. He does. All right. I'm excited. Are you ready to get into our Spider-Verse spoilers?
Yes.
So what do you want to talk about first about what you enjoyed about this film?
I just, again, like I'll say before, it did give me a newfound respect for Spider-Gwen or Gwen Stacy, because, yeah, like it just goes into more of her character, which I just didn't know about. And to provide a more real world example was, so if you go to AMC theaters, they probably are sold out by now, but they have these popcorn buckets in the shape of either Miles Morales's head or Gwen Stacy's, or Ghost Spider Gwen.
Yeah, any of the above.
And I wanted Miles Morales's, but by the time we got to the concession stand, his was sold out. So I had to settle for second place with Gwen, and
wow,
at first, you know, a little disappointed, but you know, after watching the movie, I was like, oh, it's meant to be, because yeah, I do have a little bit more respect for her. Her head is right next to me right now.
That's creepy. Is that ketchup for her?
But yeah, so I love that it focused on that. And I do like the whole, like, India, I forgot what it was called, the
Spider-Man India, Pavatar, I forget his last name.
Yeah, the Indian inspired Spider-Man. I it was just like such a cool world to be in, or universe to be in, because like it's a mixture of both Manhattan and India, so it's cool to see that. And yeah, just another spider being to kind of be introduced with. So yeah, those are my two probably favorite parts.
Yeah, I really liked that we got to see Gwen's story played out, because the whole thing with Peter Parker and him dying and her kind of blaming herself, even though she couldn't have controlled the situation, and her dad thinking she's an enemy, like seeing all that played out was very heart-wrenching. I'm happy that we got to see that in movie form. Mm-hmm. I think what I liked most, though, is even like, because I love Spider-Man, and he was very sexy, actually. And we got to see more of Spider-Punk, but they were some of, like, the bigger characters. But even with the smaller ones, like Scarlet Spider, Ben Reilly, I love that they gave him a character. Almost like if you watch RuPaul, if you watch the Snatch Game, like, you have to give your person a character. So he was very like, oh, look at these muscles. Ooh, yeah. I'm emo. So like, they just do a really good job of, we get to see these characters and they give them their own kind of character to make fun of themselves. Mm-hmm. And I love it. It's just so like meta to see the way this movie came together. And we even got like Lego Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And just I loved the canon event mechanism where like, each spider has to go through their canon event or else their world is meaningless and it gets destroyed. Like, that is so creative.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's where it causes that rift too, because you need to find some sort of conflict between all the spider beings. And I thought that was a really good way to kind of, I guess, divide in a way, like create a bit of a civil war between the spider beings. So yeah, I thought that was cool. And it looks like, I mean, I guess this is a spoiler review, like there's going to be two factions in the next movie.
Yeah.
That are going to be against each other, which is cool.
Well, and what I'm excited about is I'm going to theorize now that this is how the X-Men knows. I have a feeling we're going to get a very similar story in the third one to what we got with Gwen in this. I think it's going to start with Miguel O'Hara's story, and seeing more about how he became Spider-Man and what he had to go through, and even like why he's a vampire, because we didn't get any story about him being a vampire, really.
No. Yeah, there's only that one reference when he like showed his teeth or he bit into somebody, but that was it, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think the next one's very much going to be a Miguel movie. I have a feeling we'll go and there'll be like a Miles and a Miguel popcorn bucket. And you'll be like, gosh, I really wanted Miguel, but all I got was Miles. So yeah, this is amazing what they've been able to do. I even walked out of the theater and I was like, how did they make this and how did they make Morbius from the same studio?
Yeah.
Like, it's such a difference in quality and story and creativity. So
yeah. And I also love the multiverses include live action multiverses too.
Yeah. Oh, and I don't know if I talked to you about this, but they even showed Spectacular Spider-Man, which was one of the Spider-Man cartoons. Mm-hmm. They showed him, I think that one was in the early 2000s. One of the deep cuts that I was like, wow, I can't believe he's in it, is Spider-Man Unlimited. Spider-Man Unlimited was from the 90s. They tried to do a new show to go along with the Spider-Man 90s show, where Spider-Man goes through a rift and he becomes a new Spider-Man in a world that's very similar to Spider-Man 2099, but they did it with Peter Parker. So it was like he went through a time warp to another dimension. Okay. And he got his own costume. Even he was in this movie. I was like, these cuts are so deep.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we got to see Andrew Garfield, Tobey Maguire, Tom Holland even.
Uh-huh.
We even got a peek at, like, the audience went crazy when we saw the Asian shop owner from the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
People went crazy for her.
Yeah.
Or was she? She was in Venom.
She's in Venom.
Yeah. So people went crazy there.
And then when they showed Donald Glover in the Prowl suit.
In the Prowler suit, yes. Because, everybody went crazy because in Spider-Man Homecoming, they had him in there and he mentioned his nephew, but that was all we got. And now we got to see him in the Prowler outfit.
Yeah.
What I also really liked about both movies so far is these are original stories, but they're original in the way, if you've read the comics, you know where they pulled from to create these stories.
Mm.
So I love that. Yeah. I love that they are able to weave together things, much like the MCU is able to do.
Yeah.
Much like the X-Men movies were not able to do.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, it's even cool. I feel like this is a bit of like a Flash, DC Flash moment. But when you see Miles, both Miles versions of the one that we know, the good guy, and also the Prowler version. And I'm curious to see how that goes and how that's going to also mix up with the next movie. Because, you have already the other Spider-Beans going after Miles, but also Prowler Miles, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is crazy.
Yeah.
I'm so excited. I can't wait till March.
I know. It's going to be good.
It's going to be good.
Yeah.
All right. Was there anything else you wanted to mention?
I mean, I do like the other villain, or I guess the main villain in this one, Spot. Yeah. At first, like, I really thought he was just going to be like a throwaway villain in the beginning, but he actually...
So did Miles.
Yeah. But he's actually pretty cool and has a lot to do with this multiverses.
Yeah, I like that his backstory was like Miles threw a bagel at him by accident. Yeah, they did a really good job with him, and I think it's fun when they do that because the Spot really isn't a big villain in the comics. Mm-hmm. So when you take a character like that and you flesh them out, we're less likely to be judgy of them because we don't know them that well. So you can kind of do whatever you want.
Yeah.
So yeah, they did a really cool thing with him.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's our show.
It is.
We don't have any big hooks for next week because there's not another big movie coming out yet.
There is not.
But we will definitely bring it for... Oh, wait. Elemental.
In a couple weeks, yeah.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But we will definitely have more news for you next week because there's always news about any one of these technically four things.
Yeah, unless you want us to talk about Transformers.
No, nobody wants to hear that.
Wow.
Or if you want us to go into any type of deep dive, we will be happy to do that, which we kind of did when we started and kind of stopped. But if there's anything you want to know more about, please write us on Instagram or write us on magichavocpro@gmail.com. Mm. Havoc is with a K, H-A-V-O-K. All right. Thank you for listening. You can find me on Words of the Witches, where Kevin and I are talking the Charmed comics. Or you can find me on Solving for X, where Kevin and I are watching through the original 90s X-Men cartoon.
Nice.
Oh, yeah. And this is the only show that you're on now.
Yeah. Unless you still need to catch up on Once Upon a Cult.
Yay! Thank you for listening.
Bye.
Bye.